You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back here, midweek edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is back here with you. And we have another great episode planned out for you today. And with us, Cole Jackson, our midweek specialist here on Locked On Ravens, here to answer your questions and also talk a little bit about the game against the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday, as well as getting into a new addition to the Baltimore Ravens in Tremont Williams. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Another victory week, so more football to come, and it's some very positive things to take away from this game, so I'm excited to dive into it with you.
Yeah, absolutely, Cole. And let's start off with that game against Indianapolis. Baltimore able to pull out a very tough, gritty game, 24-10 on Sunday against those Colts. And Cole, I have to say, this was a tale of two halves for Baltimore. It's been kind of the headline throughout the whole week here. Baltimore played horribly in the first half, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Now on defense, they played an all right first half. It was limiting the Colts to just 10 points, and that was the final Colt point total, as they did not score again in the second half. But Cole, starting off with the offense and starting off with Lamar Jackson, Jackson finished 19 of 23 for 170 yards through the air, also had 13 carries for 58 yards and a score. When do you think the light switch flipped for this offense from the first half to the second half? Was it the halftime speech they got from John Harbaugh? Was it that first possession in the third quarter, albeit that ended in a fumble? Where was the light switch, and how did it get turned on by the Ravens?
Well, I think the big thing was getting Lamar Jackson in a rhythm, and it's something we've struggled to do this year. Last year, the focus on getting him in a rhythm was running the ball, using the run game to set up play action. And when they came out in the third quarter, they came out throwing. And I mean, if you look at his passing direction chart, some people aren't going to be a big fan of it. He threw almost everything except for five passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And the only balls that he threw five past 10 yards, and they were all five in the middle of the field. So it was very much... We all know the narrative, the whole Lamar can only throw in the middle of the field, he can't throw it deep outside, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, you cannot sit there and criticize a quarterback when he throws at an 83% clip. Like, and this is where I have so much faith in Lamar turning a season around with his passing, is he started to finally just take what the defense was giving him. And that's been the biggest difference that I've noticed between 2019 and 2020. He is, you know, forcing the ball downfield. He's forcing the ball to his first read. He's not going through his progressions. He doesn't seem comfortable in the pocket. And he's leaving plays on the field. Like, you can see guys breaking open on these shorter throws, and he'll push the ball downfield because he wants to make the bigger play. And so I think we saw what happens when he does take those easy plays. It'll open things up for him, because, you know, no defense can sit there and let a quarterback complete 83%. Like, that's just absolutely insane. And that's how they moved the ball in the second half. So that to me was the biggest thing I noticed. The other thing was when they went up tempo, I personally thought that was something we didn't do enough of in 2019, was go up tempo. And their method was, you know, let's run the ball, let's use an efficient passing attack, let's eat the clock. And we saw it last year. Like, we would have, you know, games where it was like 75% Ravens ball, and in terms of time of possession. And so when you're going with a hurry up offense, you can't really, you know, eat the clock like that. But what you can do is create mismatches, because you can't sub guys. And I think we missed a lot of opportunities in 2019 when we had the 13 personnel with Hurst and Andrews, who could, you know, they can be in line or they can be split out wide. And they can do some of those things with the team they have now. Not as much in 2019. Hayden Hurst was kind of that nice hybrid player where you could have enough confidence with him split out in the slot, and then you could also bring him in line and have him block. But they could still do some of that with Boyle and Andrews. And even Ricard, I mean, you're not going to ask him to run a ton of routes, but if they had 22 personnel, they could even give it more of a spread look by putting Andrews out in the slot and even splitting a Boyle if they have to. So when you use that hurry up offense and the defense can't sub, then you can, you know, go to those different formations that create mismatches. It gets Mark Andrews out in the slot against the linebacker, for example. So it'd be nice to see them do that a little bit more often. And you could see Lamar Jackson got comfortable doing it. So what I'd like to see this week is come out first offensive drive, and go with a hurry up offense. Like put out your 12 personnel with Boyle, Ricard, and Dobbins, or Edwards, whatever you want to do with the running back, and go hurry up and try some of those different formations without letting the defense sub, because I guarantee they're going to come out with their base defense, because we normally see that early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting just to see the resiliency of this offense, because this is a very young offense, and to expect that level of resiliency and not getting your head down when you're really struggling against a really good defense, I just admire that so much from this Ravens team, and even from these Ravens coaches making the necessary adjustments in the halftime locker room, coming out and the players performing on it. I completely agree, Cole. But let's talk about that offensive line a bit. This was the first real game without Ronnie Stanley, and with Tyree Phillips going on IR, Patrick McCaughey got the start at right guard. The line looked like, or from left to right, Orlando Brown Jr., Bradley Bozeman, Matt Skura, who had a little cut on his right thumb, his snapping hand, Patrick McCaughey, and then DJ Fluker. Cole, what did you see from this offensive line?
Well, they're I don't know if it's the right word, but they're bipolar. And so what I mean by that is, you know, one game they'll pass block well, but they won't run block well. And then the next game it'll be the opposite, and then the game after that it'll be the opposite. And it's been really hard to kind of come up with suggestions to improve this unit, because they just look so damn different every week. So, you know, against the Steelers, I was terrified of their run defense, because I was like, how are we going to run on these guys? And then, you know, the line was phenomenal. Patrick McCaughey played out of his mind run blocking, making a ton of combination blocks into level two. But then they come out and we can't run the ball on the Colts. And like, again, the Colts are a good defense. They have a really nice front seven. They've added Buckner. They got Darius Leonard back. Leonard's an absolute baller. But, you know, they weren't able to get anything going. And the real issue I had with the run blocking was Matt Skura. He couldn't get any sort of movement. And then McCaughey struggled. So it's like that whole right side A and B gap were just a struggle to get anything going. And Bozeman didn't even have his best game. So it was just like a really bad look for the interior offensive line. I really thought they'd be able to figure it out, because they brought in so much competition. Go to that first third down where they tried the speed option and Bozeman was right in Lamar Jackson's lap. Like, everyone was complaining about the play call, but I mean, you can't look at that play and blame the play call. The play was actually probably there. But Bozeman got in Lamar's lap within, you know, 3 seconds. And like, that's just unacceptable when you're run blocking. You gotta get guys pushing. So, I mean, if they want to try a different combination, I really think they can look at McCaughey at left guard, Bozeman at center, and Ben Powers at right guard. I think that's probably your most stout group of run blockers to get a push. The good news is, though, I felt that Brown Jr. played well at left tackle, and Fluker played well at right tackle. And I actually thought the pass pro was not bad. You know, there were a couple of bad snaps, but overall they did a really nice job adjusting with they kept an extra blocker in a few times. And, you know, sometimes that's what you got to do. You got to give your guys a chance. So I don't really have, I know some people don't like it because it's taking a receiver out, but I mean, it doesn't really matter how it's going if you're not protecting your guys. And I mean, you'll hear me talk about it over and over again. It's building this consistency, and you know, not having a preseason sucked because they didn't get a chance to try out different combinations to see what might work. And we're kind of running out of time in the season. We're halfway through, eight games down, eight to go, and we can't just keep, you know, talking about combinations. And I mentioned this before we started recording, like, it might just get to the point where this is your offensive line and they're going to struggle and you're going to have to just do things to help them out, such as keep extra blockers in, such as, you know, call more option plays where it's going to force the D line to hesitate and give your guys a bit of a step. But, you know, I don't know what they're going to do in terms of different combinations, but I really think if they try that other combination, you'll see at least a little bit more movement in the run game.
Yeah, really. I mean, a tale of two games when you talk about the Steelers game and you talk about what happened against Indianapolis on Sunday. But luckily for the Ravens, they were able to capitalize on their strengths in both. They were able to run the football really effectively, and they kind of stuck with it throughout the Pittsburgh game and then vice versa against the Colts. But finally, Cole, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, Baltimore experienced a very tough loss, you know, throughout the whole week with Marlon Humphrey, the players on the COVID list coming back with no practice, LJ Fort. But the big loss during the game for this defense was Calais Campbell, who exited on the first defensive series and did not return. He's expected to miss multiple weeks. And Cole, I wanted to talk to you about how you thought people stepped up in his absence, who you thought played really well, and what to expect going forward with those guys.
The big guy that stepped up for run defense was Derek Wolfe. He ended up taking on 51 snaps on Sunday, and he played well. He's been eating the run really well this year. He's been exactly what I think we all expected. And he brought a pretty good pass rush. He got credited for two pressures. I thought Matt Judon had a heck of a game off the edge. He had that last pressure that kind of sealed the game for us. And the big guy that stepped up for me when I was rewatching was Justin Matabike, the rookie. You know, this all opened a bit of an opportunity for him to get some of those 3-tech, 4-tech snaps that Calais Campbell usually takes. And he played phenomenal. And what he mostly did was he replaced Campbell's ability to get vertical against zone. And so that's going to be huge because we're not going to have him for the Tennessee Titans game. And we know what Derrick Henry can do behind that stretch zone scheme when you can't penetrate the inside. And Matabike showed a really nice ability. You know, sometimes he's not making the tackle, but he's disrupting the zone blocking and he's allowing other guys to flush in and make those tackles. So I thought that was really impressive. I also thought Malik Harrison had a heck of a game. There were a couple of snaps where he had to take on Quentin Nelson, and he was actually stacking up. One of them, he stacked and shed him and made the play. And a couple others, he was able to drop an anchor and stop Nelson's movement. And that's so critical against zone blocking because it's all about the line staying on the train tracks and they're just trying to keep pushing on. So as soon as you disrupt that, you knock a guy off their tracks and it opens up plays for everybody else. So, you know, I think Matabike and Harrison as rookies, I think they really stepped up. You know, not to try and be a downer, but I thought Jalen Ferguson really struggled, which was disappointing, to really build on a solid game against the Steelers. And he really struggled setting the edge. He seemed a little bit slow off the ball. So that was disappointing. McPhee was stout as always. But I mean, it's Calais Campbell is not, he's not replaceable. Like, that's just the type of player he is. But I felt really good about what Matabike was able to do out there. And I expect him to take on some of those snaps inside.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough task for these guys to step up. But again, I am confident in what these guys can do, especially because Baltimore, they always prepare for injuries. We've seen it with the cornerback position. They have $85 million and then they're down to like 3 by the end of the season. So they prepare for the depth to be tested a bit. And on the defensive line, I know the pick of Broderick Washington, for example, was largely crucified. And I was one of the people who didn't really understand it at the time because Matabike was already picked. But now we're here and we have a reason to either activate him, use him in different roles, and he's already been used. So guys all across the front seven will have to step up in the absence of Calais Campbell. But we're going to head into our first break here, and when we get back, we'll be talking about the Tremont Williams signing and what it means for the defense. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. The world in 2020 can feel like an unstable and dangerous place, but we can't live in fear. Taser is giving people the confidence to protect themselves by creating life-saving self-defense technology. They use an electrical charge to immobilize attackers for up to 30 seconds, allowing you time to escape and send emergency dispatch to your GPS location. Taser is available without a permit in most U.S. states. Get the Taser Pulse Plus or Taser Strike Light at Taser.com with promo code NFL. Save 15% now at Taser.com, promo code NFL, spelled T-A-S-E-R.com, promo code NFL. Restrictions apply. See site for details. And we are back with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens midweek edition episode. Kevin Allshaker is still here with Cole Jackson. And Cole, the Ravens made a couple of transactions yesterday. The big one, which was signing Tremont Williams. And Tremont Williams is a player who, a very decorated career, mostly with the Green Bay Packers. He's had two stints with Green Bay over the course of his career. Has had over 30 interceptions with 34. He's had 4.5 sacks. And is a guy who I think fits in really well with this Ravens defense because he started his career as an outside cornerback. He then, over the last few seasons, has really translated his game into a really effective slot cornerback. He's actually finished 2019 with a PFF grade inside the top 10 of all cornerbacks. And obviously, take PFF grades with, you know, what you will. Some hate them, some love them. But Cole, what was your initial reaction to signing this veteran corner?
Well, I think the big thing for me is he's going to allow you to do a little bit more in terms of where you put guys on defense. So like you said, he can still play outside. If you look at where he's lined up, he lined up in 2019, 181 snaps out wide and 547 in the slot. So obviously it's primarily as a slot corner, but 181 is no small number, and we're looking at a couple games above 10. And so what that does is it gives Wink flexibility. So when he wants to exploit a matchup and he wants to, or not necessarily exploit a matchup, but match up better with the offense, then he can do something like, you know, we're going to put Marlon Humphrey outside. We're going to move Jimmy Smith into that kind of safety role to take on a tight end. And then we're going to put Williams in the slot where Humphrey was, or, you know, he can come out and just start Williams as the slot corner, put Peters and Humphrey outside. And it also gives you a little bit different, a bit of a different skill set just to blend in with all that. But he can also put him outside if he wants to put Humphrey on the inside. If we're playing a team with a really, really good slot wide receiver, well, let's put our best corner on him, and then we don't have to go put Jimmy Smith out there. We can keep Jimmy Smith in more of a dime safety role that they want to try and do, and that's kind of why they brought in so much corner depth before the season, and we've just watched it absolutely deplete. So I think it's a genius move. I really like Tremont Williams. I saw a couple of people talking about how he became a liability. I don't know where that's coming from. I don't think he's ever really had a season where he was getting completely demolished. I mean, he's an older guy. He's, 37? He's almost 38 years old. So he's an older guy, but he can ball. And I think he brings a lot of versatility to this team. And it's going to be a really good fit. His ability to move around and Wink, that's what he wants in a player. The only thing I wish is we would have got him a little bit sooner, because he would be a really nice chess piece, especially against a team like Pittsburgh when they were using... you know, we talked about it after the Pittsburgh game, but they went to a lot of 0-1 and 11 personnel where they were just splitting guys out wide. I mean, they had snaps where they didn't even have a running back on the field, and they were just going traditional spread offense, and that's where you need your corners, and you need multiple slot corners. So Tremont Williams is a really good add. He's going to bring that versatility, and I think he's going to be a really good fit here.
If there's one thing Baltimore does value, it is versatility. We talk about it with the front seven on defense all the time. Guys who can play inside, outside, middle linebacker. I mean, Chris Board played safety against the Indianapolis Colts. He has a converted safety, but still, this Ravens team, they love their versatility, and I think Williams is absolutely going to bring an it factor to this Baltimore defense. But Cole, I want to talk a bit about looking down the line with Tremont Williams, because right now, as the Ravens cornerback depth stands, this is a great signing, and he's going to get ample playing time and I think make a big impact. But Cole, where do you see the playing time for these cornerbacks being split once the injured guys return? Anthony Averett is not expected to miss the whole season. He was playing very well before he went down with his shoulder injury. Khalil Dorsey wasn't getting many snaps on defense. But again, if he does return from IR, where does the roster spot come from? Is this a signing for you that is a remainder of the season into the playoff signing? Or is it more of a, all right, we have this guy for depth, but once we get our guys back, maybe he either isn't inactive or gets cut?
No, it's a really good question, because I think it's been tough to read the Marlon Humphrey situation in terms of where they want to play him. So I think you know, they had to move him into the slot in 2019 out of necessity. And, you know, he responded, I think, better than anything you could have ever imagined. Like, the way he played and keeping that high level of play was incredible. And it really is what solidified him to me as a top five corner in this game, because, you know, that's a tough transition. You're looking at a whole new set of skills that you have to be able to use in a game. And the fact that he was able to do it and still shut guys down, like, that's crazy. So I think it really begs the question, you know, do the Ravens prefer to have Marlon Humphrey in the slot, or do they prefer to have him outside? It's going to be a game-to-game situation, and that includes Jimmy Smith. You know, there might be games where we're going to see bigger physical wide receivers, and they might prefer to have Jimmy Smith outside, but then you might have a game against, like, a Kansas City where they're going to want him in that inside role so he can take on Travis Kelce and we can match up a corner on a tight end that's as good as he is. And so I think that it's going to be tough to predict week to week, but I think the key here is that it's a different skill set that gives Wink Martindale flexibility to go back to using Humphrey and Jimmy Smith in their best position based on the matchup. And so I think he's going to play a ton. I think he'll play over Terrell Bonds. And I saw Bonds getting a lot of hate online. I think he did pretty good. I mean, that's a tough, that's a tough transition into so much playing time. And, you know, he got picked on a little bit, but he also kind of responded, and I thought he put together a decent game. But I do think if you were going into your depth chart, and it's a few weeks down the road, I think you're going to have Tremont Williams penciled in as your starting slot cornerback, but I could see that changing based on who the matchup is. So for example, when we go into the Thanksgiving game, you might see Marlon Humphrey in the slot following Juju around when they put him in there. But I still think Tremont Williams is going to see a ton of playing time. I think he's going to be used a lot, and I think he's going to give Martindale that flexibility that he desires.
Yeah, for starters with Bonds, it was kind of, yes, they picked on him. Terrell Bonds was definitely picked on, but, I mean, are you going to throw at Marcus Peters? Are you going to throw at Jimmy Smith? Are you going to throw at Terrell Bonds? I think the choice there is pretty easy, and he responded, I thought, Cole, really well to your point. Played a really nice second half, so kind of a tale of two halves with him as well. But for Williams, it's almost kind of like the Dez Bryant signing where, you know, he's probably going to get a lot more playing time than Dez Bryant is right now. But the expectations for Williams, I don't think should be super, super sky high, even though he was an extremely efficient player. You know, you have to temper them a little bit until we can see what he can do. And I have confidence that Tremont Williams can come in, play really, really good football. And he obviously, I think, makes this defense better. But where you see him, how the Ravens line him up, I think is going to have a huge effect on how he performs, how the rest of the defense performs. So I do want to see how he's used before kind of jumping into something. But I also agree with you, Cole, that this probably will be a pretty matchup-dependent role for Williams, especially when you get a guy like Anthony Avert back, who hopefully is able to keep playing at the high level he was when he comes back. Baltimore saw enough in Tremont Williams to bring him in halfway through the year, kind of like a Josh Bynes, LJ Fort, even Marcus Peters type acquisition, and hopefully he'll have the same impact that those three had in Baltimore in 2019. We're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be answering your mailbag questions, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious with 6 new flavors, including caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Built Bars are healthy. They're great for the health conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. So be sure to go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. We return with our final segment of this Locked On Ravens Wednesday edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher is still here talking with Cole Jackson. And Cole, getting into these mailbag questions, we have some good ones here and also some ones that might stir some controversy up. And so let's get into the controversy right away, kind of stirring the pot. A question here from Mac Jones, and he asks, why is Lamar still regressing? So let's stir this pot a bit, Cole, and talk about, yes, the statistical kind of things that you see from Lamar Jackson from his 2019 MVP season to his 2020 season right now. There's a clear drop-off, but I still think he is playing good football, and I personally don't think he is regressing. Cole, what are your thoughts?
Well, I just think it's a really bad week to call that out. So I could see people tweeting that last week where he struggled, especially getting the ball outside the numbers. But when you go back and you watch the way he played against the Colts and the way he threw some of these balls with the precision, anticipation, and decisiveness that we saw him do in 2019, that's what's been missing. So, I mean, has he statistically regressed? Yes. Did he show regression in the game against the Colts? I think he showed a lot of what made him so great in 2019, throwing the football. And I've seen it a couple times this week, and I just find the timing of it is just, it's really poor strategically, because it's not a good week to try and make that argument. You know, overall, I think, and we fleshed it out. I mean, there's been a ton of issues with Lamar Jackson this year. But, you know, if you look at that game, specifically how he came out in the second half, I mean, if he builds on that and he gets back to that type of play and defenses adjust to how he's going to exploit the middle of the field, that's what's going to open up that stuff outside. And that's kind of where, you know, I always get a kick out of the passing yards argument that people make, like, oh, he doesn't throw for, you know, over 200 yards every game. I mean, yards or whatever, it's really about, in the context of the Ravens offense, it's all about him being efficient in the air. And you know, what's more efficient than 83%? Like, do you want him to complete 100% of his passes? So, I mean, I felt good about his game. I felt good about the play calling and how they were able to move the ball in the air. You know, it was only down 3 points, but they were still down in the game, and they just came out, they moved the ball in the air, and they set up a touchdown. So I just think it's a bad week to try and say he's regressing.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole point with this question is, again, I was personally expecting a statistical drop-off from Lamar Jackson in terms of just the pure domination that the Ravens played with on offense in 2019. It would have been really tough to replicate that in 2020, especially, again, the loss of Marshall Yanda, huge. You lose Hayden Hurst, that's really underrated. And now with the Ravens playing the schedule, which is easy, I think, I mean, they had the easiest strength of schedule going into the 2020 season based off of 2019 records. People are looking at Lamar Jackson, they're looking at big games, they're looking at playing from behind, and they're saying, well, the Ravens went 14-2 last season, why can't they go 16-0 this season? It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. I wish that the progression translated to stats and wins, but sometimes progression comes with losses. Honestly, losses and bad weeks, those help progression more than regression. And I agree, Cole, this was a week where I thought Lamar Jackson, we saw the progression from the first half to the second half. There are still some weeks where he'll go back to some bad habits, and that is potentially a sign of regression, whether it be long or short-term regression. But right now, I don't necessarily think that he is regressing. I think he's been progressing ever since his rookie season. He just has a few bad games here and there, as everybody does. But again, bad first half for Lamar Jackson, great second half. Our next question comes from Michael Santangelo Jr. And Michael asks, why is Levine getting underutilized when we are missing all these secondary players? Chris Board is getting more hybrid safety snaps. And so, Cole, I kind of touched on this before, but Chris Board played some safety against the Colts. He was a converted safety out of North Dakota State, the same college that Carson Wentz went to. But Anthony Levine is a guy who I think the Ravens can use in a lot of different ways, and they have over the course of his career. What are your thoughts on Levine getting underutilized here?
Well, I think the big thing to remember with Levine is he did come off an injury, and that made me wonder if some of that was playing a factor in his usage. But the other thing, specifically with the Colts game, in terms of using Chris Board in that Levine role, first of all, I think Board does a lot of things that the team would like to replace with Levine. Levine's getting a little bit older, and you know, he's not going to be around forever, and they need to kind of think about filling that role. And it could be Chris Board is that guy. He plays special teams. He can get up in the box. He can drop down a little bit. He played absolutely terrible when he had to start at linebacker last year, specifically against the Chiefs early in the season. And so, you know, he kind of ended up riding the pine the rest of the year. And then he came out this year and he's really shown development. And I think that's the critical piece. But in terms of the Colts, I think their strategy might have been that they were expecting a little bit more of a run game. We saw a lot of those screens going out wide. They did some bubble screens. They did some wide receiver screens. They tried some end arounds. And I think what they might have preferred was having Chris Board's tackle ability versus Levine's coverage ability against some of these guys. I don't think they had very much, I don't think they were very worried about the pass catchers on the Colts, given, you know, they were missing T.Y. Hilton. They were just getting Michael Pittman back. But he's a rookie coming off injury. They didn't have a lot of threats, but they tried to kind of use those gadget plays to get the Ravens off kilter, and it worked. And I think that might be what they were thinking. I like Board a little bit better making those tackles in space. So Board really showing development, and also the matchup of wanting that that skill set in that role.
Yeah, I think for this game in particular, I mean, obviously with the loss of LJ Fort, he played a bit of linebacker, and then obviously the safety role. With Levine in general, though, I have to agree with you, Cole, in the fact that, you know, he's getting up there in age, and we saw in the mic'd up little preview Baltimore put out yesterday that he's mentoring some of these guys, and I think that Levine is still a very capable football player, but that injury that he had, John Harbaugh said a few weeks ago that he was in immeasurable pain, had to miss a game, and it was tough for him, so maybe they're just trying to manage his snaps right now. But hopefully, as the year goes on and the season kind of goes into December, that Levine will start to pick up more of those snaps as a veteran presence. But when guys are playing well, Chris Board has played phenomenally this season. He was somebody who I expected the Ravens to actually cut when cut day happened coming out of training camp, but they kept him on along with Otara Alaka. And those were two of the most, they are two of the most impressive players to me on this Ravens roster, because arguably their best special teams player was Otara Alaka before he went down with his injury. And Chris Board has played great on special teams as well as linebacker, safety, wherever you throw him. So I think that, yes, Chris Board, he got a lot of playing time against the Colts, and I think he deserved all of it. And Levine, he'll get his shot as well. He's gotten a shot throughout his career. He's proven that he's a veteran and a good veteran at that. So I think both guys can be used in tandem very, very well. But our next question comes from Kiran Patel, and he asks, what is happening to Ben Powers? I'm tired of seeing the interior of our line in JK's lap. There has to be some role for him. Is he in the doghouse? What changed that might not be obvious between the first and the second halves? Thanks. So two questions there from Kiran in terms of Ben Powers. I think he deserves a shot. I mean, Macari, yes, they kind of showed a rotation between Powers and Macari a few weeks ago, but now I don't think you have that luxury. So with that question, Cole, and then also between the first and the second half for Indianapolis, we kind of talked about it a bit, but let's kind of flip the question and ask, what happened between the first and the second half for the defense?
Good question. So for, start with Ben Powers. I really don't get it. I mean, even if you go back to that game where he rotated with Macari, I personally felt both played pretty well in that game, but I actually thought, and it's tough because sample size does play a role. Macari played more snaps than Powers. I think Powers got four series, like three or four. But Powers played solid, and he's played solid almost every time he's been in the game in a Ravens uniform, some of which has been in preseason against lesser competition. But nonetheless, that's all we have to work off of. And so I don't get it. It's something that, you know, it's tough to speculate on because I don't see what happens in practice. I mean, he could be a case of a guy that just doesn't try in practice and they don't have confidence. I'm not saying that's what it is, but if you're asking me to speculate, it has to be something like this, because there's no way you're turning on his game film where he's been in the game. So you're looking at Pittsburgh last year or the snaps he's played this year, and you're coming away thinking he can't get the job done, because it's just not true. I mean, every time he's been on the field, he's played well. So I don't know. Like I said at the start, I really think putting him in at right guard next to Fluker, I think you could really get some movement, especially if Bozeman's at center there. Again, it's hard at this point in the season to expect that to happen, but I think that's their best bet. And then looking at the flipped question, so, you know, what did the defense do differently? I don't think – I kind of tweeted about this during the game, but – the Colts, it wasn't so much the first versus second half with the Colts offense versus our defense. It was the first quarter versus the next three quarters. And so what the Colts did is they really emptied their playbook. You know, they were running a ton of gadget plays, you know, the end arounds. You just have to go out there and you have to play football. And, you know, you can't play in the NFL an entire game of those types of plays. You can see some of that in college with some of the misdirection and, you know, really pushing the balls to the edges, but defenses adjust to it, and the Ravens did. And that's all what I liked what the Ravens did is they didn't panic. They didn't try and, you know, put out different packages to try and combat it. They just kind of played their game, and I think Martindale knew that at some point they were going to have to, you know, they're going to have to run the ball up the middle. They were going to have to run the ball off their edge. They weren't going to be able to do end arounds all day because they're just not going to work at some point. And so I really think that the big thing that the defense did was they just stayed calm. They waited until the Colts started trying to play their game. And, you know, I think what I was criticizing the defense in the early second quarter because I thought they were giving really soft cushions against a team that like Philip Rivers can't throw the ball more than 15 yards downfield anymore, or at least he's not the most efficient doing it. So they try and keep things short. They run a lot of horizontal concepts, and I thought we were giving them a lot of cushion. And then we kind of adjusted, and there was more press, and then our pass rush started to get the heat going, and then the interception happened, and you know that's really what happened. So I think the Ravens kept playing their game. And the Colts had to kind of adjust to it because they weren't going to be able to go with trickery all day.
Yeah, and I think that's big there. And I agree. I thought Baltimore's defense was playing really off in the Colts offense coming into the game, the sixth fastest offense in terms of snapping the football and then getting the football out on pass plays. So I thought once they started to press a bit more and kind of force that issue, they really turned their game up, and that was a big part of it. But our final question here comes from Eric Clark, who's asked a ton of great questions over the last few weeks, and he asked the question relatively soon after the Indianapolis game, and he asks, the seven-man protections, they kept Lamar comfortable, and we had our three most dangerous yards after the catch weapons on the field than Brown, Duvernay, and J.K. Dobbins. Is this our new go-to formation from the 50 to the opponent's 20 to get into the red zone, and is it dangerous enough to scare the defense deep but also to run?
It's a good question, and it's a really good pickup, Eric. I completely agree with you, and I think it was in Greg Roman's playbook, if you find it, it's called a sword concept, and basically what they did was they modified the tight end or the Y route stayed into block, and then Ricard motioned across the formation onto Boyle's side, and they kept him into block too. So it was a seven-man protection, max protect, and the key was hitting the crossing route in between. You know, they were playing kind of Tampa 2 style linebackers, just two linebackers running hook coverage, and Lamar just hit it in between the two of them as the crossing route broke. And I would like to see more of it. The only thing is you don't have Andrews on the field. That might be an adjustment they can make. Oh, and the other thing, because you did mention it, in that play, they leaked J.K. Dobbins for a check down. And I know Spencer Schultz, who's on the show on Mondays, that's always been one of his complaints with Greg Roman's offense, is we don't have enough check down concepts. So that play had that built into it. We can get J.K. out in space and let him do some of the things that make him so great with his balance and making guys miss. So, you know, will it become a go-to? I can see them coming back to that package because I really like it. I think you can run well out of it. And it's one of those ones where I mentioned if we go up tempo, they can do some really interesting things with that personnel. You know, you could end up with you know, keeping Boyle and Ricard in tight where they're going to threaten you to run, but then you have the speed of Duvernay and Brown out, or you can motion J.K. Dobbins out of the backfield, and then you have three speed guys out that can run routes and catch the ball. So, you know, once you start going up tempo with that and the defense can't sub, then you can really exploit some of those mismatches. So I think it's a good point. I hope it's used again because I think it worked really well, and I think there's a lot of flexibility that Roman can call plays out of that formation.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's something, you know, having your best, you know, I guess speedsters on the field there in Duvernay and Brown with J.K. Dobbins in there too, you want from the opponent 50 to the, or from the midfield point to the opponent 20, you want to have a formation, a personnel grouping in there that, as Eric mentioned, it helps both the deep passing game while also sometimes opening up the run. And it's a whole game situation. It's where the Ravens are successful. So against the Steelers start to bring guys up in the box. So towards the end of that game, you have Devin Duvernay run on that kind of deep route. And the run game opened up that route for Devin Duvernay, albeit it was very late. The Ravens were in a two-minute passing offense. But still, I think that helped. And then vice versa, the Colts were kind of taking people out of the box. So, for example, on that Lamar touchdown, they committed so hard to the inside run because they knew it was third and one. They were doing this and that. Lamar Jackson took that bootleg, ran it across, and nobody followed him. And Mark Andrews blocked the defender into the sun, which really helped. But I think that This is a great personnel grouping to have. It honestly plays to the Ravens' strengths on offense. But Cole, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And when we get back next week, hopefully Baltimore will avenge Joe Flacco and get a win against the Patriots on Sunday night.
Oh, I can't wait for this game. And I love primetime games. That just helps with my family life and not having to worry about my daughter screaming in the background while I'm trying to watch the game. So, you know, it's funny. Back-to-back games, we'd never won a game at Lucas Oil Stadium or in Indy. And now we've never won a regular season game in Foxborough. And we get to set the ship right back-to-back weeks. So, you know, it's a big week. And, you know, you can never take a New England Patriots team lightly. So got to go out there and get it done.
Absolutely. Milestones weren't just made for 2019. Baltimore's still making them here in 2020. But that's all that we have for you today on Locked On Ravens. When we get back tomorrow, we'll be doing Crossover Thursday with Locked On Patriots and more. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.